Капіталіст, нами правду любивий світ. Рветься серце до сонця, рветься серце до волі, тече нас вічна, мила і дорога.
Listening to Nasha Kasha Ukrainian Almanac on CHRW 94.9 FM at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. Also on CHMR 93.5 FM in St. John's, Newfoundland. On CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax. On local 107.3 FM in St. John, New Brunswick. On CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. On CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston. On CFMU 93.3 FM in Hamilton, CKMS 102.7 FM in Kitchener-Waterloo, on CKLU 96.7 FM in Sudbury, on CILU 102.7 FM in Thunder Bay, on 101.5 UMFM in Winnipeg, and on CFMQ 98.1 FM in Hudson Bay, Saskatchewan.
Hello.
My name is John Jaworski, or Ivan Jaworski, and I actually have been using Ivan more and more in recent years, even for some of my publications. Born in Hamilton, I grew up essentially in Ottawa, where I went to school, high school, and then university. During my PhD studies, I applied for a job at the University of Waterloo, and was appointed first as a contract lecturer and then as a full-time instructor beginning in 1987. So recently retired after spending 31 years with the Department of Political Science at the University of Waterloo. Okay, to understand Donbas and what has been happening in Donbas, including in recent years, I think one has to keep in mind that Donbas is what you can see as a deteriorating Rust Belt region, outmoded metallurgical industry, coal mines that were becoming increasingly difficult to exploit, etc. But it was also neglected by Kyiv to a large extent, and the various governments in Kyiv going back to the 1990s, so in a sense, allowed the local oligarchs in eastern Ukraine to exploit this region even further. Many people in Donbas still live with the image that we were the powerhouse or one of the powerhouses of the Soviet Union. They have failed to realize the extent to which they became over time in recent decades and already in the late Soviet Union a kind of, as I said, deteriorating and dysfunctional, rusty region, Rust Belt region. And then there was Kyiv's neglect. And Kyiv, in terms of regional policies, that is, support for the regions, development of the regions, that has been a consistent problem from independence onwards. And it's not just Crimea, it's not just Donbas. All of Ukraine's regions were neglected in terms of Kyiv failing to come up with good and effective regional policies. There has been some correction there in the last few years as a result of decentralization efforts, which have provided the regions, the oblasti, with more autonomy, and less the oblasti, but even further down, the rayone and cities and so on and so forth. Some see this as a success, one of the few successes of post-2014 Ukraine. Some of these local governments, municipal and other local governments, have finally been provided with the kind of autonomy that allows them to develop more effectively.
Well, taxing powers, property taxes, yeah. Businesses, people didn't pay property taxes. They paid general taxes, and then some bureaucrat in Kyiv decided not only how much a municipality would get, but how to spend that money.
Yes, decentralization is generally seen as a success story for Ukraine. But again, it's a bit paradoxical. You have Ukraine facing a very troubled conflict in eastern Ukraine and trying to decentralize at the same time. Nonetheless, this process of granting more powers to local governments has, in some cases at least, in quite a few cases, allowed these local governments to develop in a more effective and functional fashion.
Can we take it to the events in the Sea of Azov and just add it to the tension worldwide?
The issue is related very much to the status of Crimea. So it is de facto controlled by Russia, but de jure, meaning in law, it is still considered part of Ukraine. There was an agreement dating back to 2003, which allowed both Russia and Ukraine to control the waters of the Sea of Azov, as well as the waters of the strait connecting the Black Sea to the Sea of Azov. Russia, however, considers that it is now in legitimate control of Crimea, although that legitimacy has not been recognized by the international community, and therefore argues that it is in control of both sides of the, that is, on the land on both sides of the Kerch Strait, and therefore has the full right to control shipping between the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov.
Thus cutting off some of our ports in Ukraine.
Two major ports on the Ukrainian side of the Sea of Azov. Those ports are Mariupol and Berdyansk.
Do you have a sense of how important to all of Ukraine's economy these two ports are?
Those two ports, the ones I mentioned, are more significant in terms of Ukraine's metallurgical exports, but they also export a fair amount of Ukraine's agricultural produce.
Ukraine, you reminded us, is connected to Crimea geographically by an isthmus. Mr. Putin decided to build a connection between Crimea and Russia, a physical one, a bridge. Can you reflect on that?
Projects of that sort, incidentally, go back quite a ways. There was even a German effort during World War II to build a bridge connecting Crimea with Russia, the territory of Russia. There was a brief-lived bridge, but it was a rather shoddy affair, and it was destroyed at some point during World War II. And a bridge was actually constructed fairly quickly and completed earlier this year in 2018, connecting the Kerch region of Crimea with the territory of what Ukrainians traditionally know as Kubань, part of the, I think it's Stavropol Krai in Russia. It's a long bridge. It's a bridge which was built in what are considered to be difficult conditions. It's not the best region for building a bridge, but nonetheless, a bridge has been built. Since sometime in the summer of 2018, there has been traffic. Some ships which used to travel to the ports of Mariupol and Berdyansk can no longer do so because of the height of the bridge. But many other ships can make the, including freighters, can go under the bridge, but there have been additional problems in terms of Russia trying to control the extent of shipping between the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov.
From where you sit as an academic, what are the options, military and diplomatic, to find a way out of this situation?
Well, one option, the military option, is not a particularly realistic one. That is military option for Ukraine. And that's largely because Ukraine didn't have a very large navy to begin with. And many of the ships it did have, even if they were somewhat run down, were lost when Crimea was occupied by Russia. Russia, in contrast, has very much built up its naval capacity. In military terms, Russia is in a much more powerful position. But Ukraine was trying to beef up its military presence on the Sea of Azov.
Is there evidence that Ukraine was trying to beef up its navy on the Sea of Azov?
Yes, there was talk, even in recent months, of Ukraine trying to establish a naval base in Berdyansk. This effort to move some these small ships from Odessa to the Sea of Azov was probably interpreted by Russia as an effort by Ukraine to beef up its naval presence in the Sea of Azov.
Weak navy by any comparisons, Ukraine does have a standing army, and yet so much of the defense of eastern Ukraine and the population has been left to militia forces. Why these volunteer units?
Ukraine, although it inherited a very large part of the old Soviet armed forces, generally neglected its armed forces, and especially under President Yanukovych, the degree of corruption within the military, the extent to which military goods were being pilfered, was really quite astounding. By 2014, Ukraine had a very small, underfunded, and neglected military. And that is why, essentially, in 2014, volunteer forces had to play a significant role in the Donbas region. The country, which emerged after Yanukovych fled Ukraine, then quickly began to devote more attention to building up its regular military. But essentially, the policy has been one of fighting fires since the major issue was the land conflict in Donbas. Ukraine had to build up its ground forces. Ukraine probably should have devoted more attention to quickly reviving its naval forces. We now see the unfortunate results, but it would have been difficult even in the best of circumstances. Building ships, by the way, is a major multi-year project, and that's why Ukraine has engage in some discussions with the United States to get some ships, some small ships. That's one short-term option, which was pursued and apparently is in the works. Russia's attempts to fully control shipping between the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov is overall considered to be illegitimate. Russia does have its own ports on the Sea of Azov. It is shipping goods out of those ports, and those ships could be sort of restricted in terms of their access to some of the ports in Europe. There are already statements coming from Western Europe that, at a minimum, recent sanctions imposed on Russia will be rolled over, that is, will be continued. It might result in new sanctions being imposed.
Should the people of Ukraine feel that they are in good hands and be optimistic about the future?
Ukraine is entering a new electoral cycle at a difficult time when Ukraine's economy, although reviving, is still relatively weak. Many feel that the current government, the Poroshenko government, has not done enough to revive the economy and especially fight corruption, which is still a very major issue in Ukraine. Some positive steps have been taken, but many steps have not been taken, and corruption still remains a major issue, including in circles close to the current president. So there is some significant dissatisfaction, for very good reasons, in Ukraine. Anything like the current crisis surrounding the Kerch Straits and access of shipping to the Azov Sea not only has an immediate impact in terms of Russia, of Ukraine's exports, but also deters potential investment. So I think that's another major source of problems for Ukraine, the extent to which investment in Ukraine can be deterred by any signs of pressure coming from Russia on Ukraine's economy.
In the program, you heard Roman Semesal and the Telenyuk sisters, Lesya and Halina, with a cut from the album Songs of War. It's called «Мені тебе не вистачає». Rushnichok played «When Clouds Hide the Sun» from Volume 5. And this is Ti Amen Ka with a song about the sea, simply called «Вода» or «Water».
Колір, як у твого будинку номер, я би приїхав, але мій ровер ще не вигадали, не зібрали, не побудували шлях. Цей цвях тримає дах, не вдах. У цього моря такий подих, як до очей долоні дотик. А море темне зовсім, як твій поверх. Але сьогодні не тоді, і зараз я не я. Ще одна з маленьких трагедій, ще одного дня.
Все тече, зорі, все мене.
Наша каша.
Kasha is also a podcast. Subscribe for free at iTunes and at many other providers. Partial funding for the program comes from the Taras Shevchenko Foundation. I'm your reporter, Stefan Andrusiak. Back in a week, do milої зустрічі за тиждень часу. Дорогі слухачі.
П'ємося з Дніпра, ей, у Києві ворог і шах у колони, героїв чекає сестра. Героїв чекає сестра. Тримайтесь, герої, за нами святий Юрій, у тяжким нерівним бою. Петлюра, бороди за маті, бороди за маті свою. Нерівнім бою потремтіли гармати, і полі степами прогули, героїв походу відплакали мати.